Welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast, your audio source for what's going on in the Chicago theater scene. Coming up on today's podcast, we have an interview with Walter Stearns and Eugene Dijon from Porchlight Music Theater. They will be talking to Tom Williams about their latest show, Ragtime. Also, we have an audio review of Ragtime, and of course, Chicago's theater news. So sit back and relax, and get ready to talk theater.
This is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. Our special guests this week are two of the principal members of Porchlight Music Theater. They have currently running Ragtime, one of the great productions that I've seen of this show. Our guests today are artistic director and the director of Ragtime, Walter Stearns. Hello, Walter.
Hi, Tom.
And we're also joined by Eugene Dijon, who is the music director of the show. Hello, Eugene.
Hi, how are you?
Great. So, Walter, tell us about Ragtime. I just think it's the best production you guys have done since Sweeney Todd.
Thank you very much. I'm immensely proud of the production. It's a dream come true working on this musical. I started fantasizing and dreaming of this musical the first time I encountered it, that classic Frank Galati production that played at the Oriental so many years ago.
Yes, I remember. It was magnificent.
It's a magnificent musical, and I always think in choosing a season, you start with picking the very best material you can, and you'd be hard-pressed to find a better musical at the end of the 20th century than Ragtime.
Well, give us a little capsulization of what it's about.
Well, it's a story about what it is to be an American. The story surrounds three different groups of people, a Jewish immigrant group of people, an African-American group of people, and a group of people who are sort of white Anglo-Saxon Protestant, well-to-do from the New Rochelle area.
And it's set right after the start of the 20th century, right? 1906, I believe?
That's right, the 1900s. It's sort of a pinnacle moment in our nation's history, just when the Industrial Revolution was taking off, when immigrants were arriving in this country, and when the country was starting to discover how great America is and how challenging American life can be. And so the story of these three groups of people are interwoven sort of in a 6 degrees of separation way, kind of like you don't realize how interrelated everyone on the planet is. And this story sort of weaves all of their stories together into one tapestry. There are celebrity characters like Harry Houdini and Evelyn Nesbitt, J.P. Morgan, Henry Ford, who touch on their lives as well. And so you've got...
Americana.
Americana. One of the real strengths of the show is that... just as there are different groups represented, there are many different musical styles represented in the production.
So it's more than just Ragtime.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, Eugene, let me ask you this. In a show that has, I believe there's 31 songs in the show. I know on the CD that I have, they had to put it on two CDs.
Right.
What is the challenge you, as a music director with a limited number of musicians to create that big sound that you do? I mean, your production sounded like the soundtrack, which I'm sure there was like 40 musicians.
Well, that's a wonderful compliment. It's interesting with this show because of the different styles of music that are portrayed in the show. So anytime the immigrants come on, for instance, the clarinet is heard.
So it's more of a
klezmer clarinet.
Klezmer sound, okay.
The klezmer sound comes out. And when the New Rochellians come out, you hear the sweeping strings and an oboe or an English horn or a flute. And then when you hear
the
people of Harlem, you hear lots of trumpets and you hear
piano.
A lot of piano because of the Ragtime influence, especially with Cole House, the leading character who's in the show, a professional pianist. So they all have their own themes and they all have their own instruments. But what's so remarkable is that with the six limited musicians I have, each of them plays so many different instruments that people really don't really know how many instrumentalists up there because they're constantly switching from instrument to instrument.
You got that sound with six musicians. Mm-hmm. That's
six
terrific.
Humans playing how many instruments do you think?
4, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. 14 instruments plus the percussionist who's playing a whole flurry of instruments. So really,
so you found a way of putting a full orchestra in six people.
Yes,
that's terrific.
Yeah,
obviously that allows you because, I mean, this is a very big cast, Joe. Give us some of the lead people and some of the lead characters.
It's the largest cast we've ever put together at Porchlight Music Theater. It's a cast of 22.
Wow.
And with six musicians. And it's a pretty stirring experience when you're in a theater. The theater only seats 148 people. You're only about four rows from the stage. And 21 people and six musicians come out and sing and make music in full force. It's a thrilling experience to be in the theater. It absolutely is.
And those fabulous transitions you make. I mean, this is a show that when we saw it at the Palace, if you remember, it was going on all over. The stage was so large. It was above you, to the left, to the right. And the transitions were cool. But the way you guys did them on at the theater building's north stage, a relatively small stage, was really amazing.
I'm really proud of how swiftly the action of the story moves. You're not in that fabulous Broadway production. There were tremendous scenic effects, and we don't really achieve those scenic effects in our limited theater space. But we do serve the play, and we serve the storytelling very well. And as a result, the story moves. It's much more swift. There's no waiting around for something to change. You go from location to location in a light cue.
Yeah, it's an epic. I mean, you're telling three stories, any one of which would make a terrific musical. And it does flow. And those of us who have seen major productions of it, yours was magnificent. Everyone's saying, how do they do that?
So, okay. what's such a tribute to the production is really Walter's vision. Because honestly, the choreographer and myself and a lot of the actors, we really didn't know quite how we were going to do it. Because usually the show is done with almost 30 musicians and over 50 actors. And to do it with only 21 actors and six musicians in such a grand scope and to make it seamless. Really, you can't really tell between the Broadway production and the touring production and our production, because Walter really thought through each track of every actor, and every actor is utilized to the nth degree. And I was talking to the actors the other day, and they said if they actually had to do a regular production of Ragtime, they would be amazingly bored, because with the individual characters they would play, they would have a lot of sitting around. But in this production, they're constantly moving and they're constantly doing something and on stage acting and singing and dancing.
I agree. And you could see that. I'm sure that the costume change. It must be a fun show to see in the back.
Oh, yes. It's interesting. There's one character, Evelyn Nesbitt. She does her big act, one number, and she has to get off stage downright, run clear across the backstage, go backstage and change into her immigrant costume to come on for the next scene. And she has only one song to do it in. And she has to change everything from wigs to dresses to shoes to hose to everything. And it's pretty amazing.
It's a whole other story backstage.
Yeah, I'm sure it's fun. And I think people appreciate that when they see that in the show. Because, on opening night, I thought it was absolutely flawless. It was seamless. It was flawless. It's a tribute. I know Walter, you once told me that the devil is in the details.
That's absolutely right.
And I'm sure that shows there. Now, who did the choreography? Because I thought not only the dances and the styles, but the movement as part of those transitions really added a lot to the show.
The marvelous Brenda Didier is a sensational Chicago treasure of a choreographer.
Yes, she is.
She was just nominated again for a Jeff Citation yesterday on Sideshow. And she's a delightful, upbeat personality, and the actors just they love working with her and collaborating, and they love pleasing her too. In a way, she pushes them to do their best work, and they want to do it for her because she's so motivating and delightful.
Well, she must be teaching some steps, because I know a lot of the casting you did was for the big voices and for those that could act. I know, given that, with limited budgets, you know, you have to,
sure.
If they can dance, that's a plus.
Well, we were,
but they dance very well on most of the numbers.
We were seeking out those triple threats. So, you know, we understood that certain roles were more dance heavy and dance specific than others. And we held large dance calls on top of the singing, on top of the acting.
For all three sections of groups. I mean, we actually had the three groups do their own dances. And
but it's remarkably strong
them.
As a dance show, too,
yes.
and a lot of people thought that. So tell us about some of the key people in this show, because I know you had, what, two equity contracts for the show?
Sure, two equity contracts, and we entered into Ragtime, and we didn't have a Cole House walker. And it was pretty scary because it's a very challenging and demanding role.
Yeah, that's like one of the key roles.
It's sometimes hard to cast. And we didn't have this person when we announced the show. We held several weeks of auditions. We saw 230 actors,
wow,
for the production, for the 22 roles. And fortunately, this young man, this great new talent, Jason Brooks, came out of heaven, dropped out of heaven into our laps, and he steals the show as Cole House Walker. He does a sensational
job. He is phenomenal, and I think everyone said it. He's going to have quite a career, and I mean, he had that he looks young, and he had that energy, but I think that's valid. I think Cole House is a younger guy. Sometimes we've seen older actors play it.
Yeah,
sure.
But, and he had the energy, and what a big voice.
Yeah, he's stunningly talented.
Yes,
yeah.
He really is.
And opposite Jason, we have the most talented Carla Beard.
Oh,
she's playing fabulous. Sarah, and you know she's been on many, many a stage here in Chicago. And
she's one of our top divas.
And
absolutely,
yeah. With her, you know, three Jeff Award nominations and just her seasoned talent, really has brought a different facet to the role that I've never seen in that part. Usually, it's played very differently, and she has a tenderness about her, and there's. It's a much more thoughtful performance than
most
Sarah's
and she's
are.
Warm and you and
yes
yeah, yes.
And there's of course we have some veterans of Porchlight who've come back, including Bill Ingraham, who plays father, and
he's
Charissa
I thought
Armin.
It was the best thing I've seen Bill.
Yes,
in, tell me.
I agree.
And I think Bill is one of those steady guys that's. It, like Hume Cronin was for years on Broadway, you know, that was never got the recognition, but was always in shows and doing well. And Bill
is a very
did a
terrific smart actor,
yeah.
Very versatile,
and he can do it all.
Oh
you
yeah,
know? Yeah. And Charissa Armand, a sensational actress, singer, absolutely steals
playing mother.
The show, playing mother.
Yes, I really liked her. Yes.
And then of course Aaron Graham, who comes back to Porchlight Music Theater. And if I have one more person come out of the theater and say, "How'd you get Mandy Patinkin to play this role?" Aaron plays Tata in the show and often steals the show right from out
well,
from
you know,
under
that is
people.
Such an underrated part. I think you have to sing in accent and he has to be charming and so forth. Yeah,
he's so lovable in the
yes.
role. Yeah.
And how about brother? Tell her, that's wasn't that
oh
your
younger
record?
Brother. Younger brother is
was the hardest role that we had to cast.
It was the last role that we cast, and I didn't know going into the project. I expected Cole House or Sarah; those would be the ones
contracts.
That we would be struggling to find. And there was something about younger brother. There was a quality that we couldn't find, and we held auditions and callbacks, and we kept calling people in for many weeks. Eventually, we happened upon this. Tremendously talented equity actor Scott Sawinski, who plays younger brother, and I gotta say, usually this role is quite forgettable, but he makes so much out of this role.
Yes,
it is a completely unforgettable performance.
Well, he adds an idealism that in other people who did it, you don't realize he's this idealist till way at the end, and then you wonder what he was about. But right from the beginning, you could see that he was a man looking for a cause. Sure.
And yes. What a stunning talent he is, and that incredible voice he has. He has, he has his vocal training from Juilliard, and he's using every strength of his talents that's on stage.
Actually, it's interesting because I'm having him sing his entire range, all the way from the bottom of his range, all the way to the top of his range, because he's usually a tenor. But I've made him even sing some bass parts, just because he has such a breadth of knowledge of his voice. I mean, he really utilizes it to the nth degree. So I'm just amazed by his talent.
So you love that when they have the big range and want to use it. Yeah.
And most of our actors, and that's another thing about this show, is that the people that we've hired, their ranges are so broad that in one moment I can have them sing the top of the range, and then maybe in the next song, oh, you know, why don't you sing alto? And they're going at it because they really get to flex their muscles that they usually don't get to when they do other shows where they're pigeonholed and just doing these parts.
Well, that's one of the comments that I heard from people leaving the theater and outside, where they're saying, man, they couldn't believe how well the show was sung. And I mean, that's
well,
a test. You guys have good choices of people, but this was remarkably strong. So now it's time for a little commercial for the show. So Walter, tell us what days is run, where it's at, how much the tickets, you know, here's a little commercial.
Ragtime performs at Theater Building Chicago, 1225 West Belmont, now through May 27th. We perform on Thursdays, Fridays, Saturdays at 7:45 p.m., on Sundays at 2:30. For tickets and reservations, you contact Theater Building Chicago at 773-327-5252. For information, you can contact Porchlight Theater at porchlighttheater.com. And Porchlight Theater is one word, and theater is spelled with an R-E.com.
Okay, and how much are the tickets?
They range in price from $28 to $35, depending on the day and if you're...
All right, I know I've asked you this before in other interviews. How can you do a show with 22 actors, 6 musicians, 2 equity contracts, a stage manager... Yeah. And only charge that.
It's sweat equity. It's a lot of us are really doing it for the love of our art, and I think that the love shines on the stage. And I wish that we could pay more, and someday we'll be in a position to.
But it's a tremendous bargain for the theater goers, because you know you see some of these little tour, and I'm not talking about Broadway shows. Some of the little touring things that are around town, the people in their $50-$60 tickets for a 1 hour show, you know.
I've often thought that the really valuable experience should be the intimate theater experience. When you're able to sit 4 rows from the stage, I think that that's more valuable than going and sitting in the 10th row of the last balcony, hundreds of yards from the stage. And yet, people do that every day, and they're paying hundreds more for it.
Yes, they are.
When they come and experience our Porchlight Music Theater, and you're sitting 4 rows or less away from the action, and you really feel an emotional connection and a deeper impact with the storytelling.
How do the actors relate to this being this close? I mean, they're landing and selling their songs, and they're right on top of the audience, which I love that experience. And people leave, they go, wow, they can't believe it. That's what real theater is.
It's more of a relationship, I'd say.
It's true. Yeah, and actually what's so interesting about the actors is they're so smart that they can change on a dime based on how the audience is going. So if the audience is being more compelled one way or the other, they might nuance their performance a little different toward one or the other, just because they could feel the audience going towards something.
It's so, live theater. Every night is a different performance, and the audience really contributes to the impact and
absolutely
the energy.
Yeah,
I'm
glad you said it. I brought this in several interviews. A lot of people that go to theater don't realize. I mean, in a nonverbal, maybe an indirect way, they realize it, but consciously they don't realize how much a part of the show they are.
Yeah, and we're deeply impacted by everything that happens in the audience. You know, we had a little old lady over the weekend pass out in the house, and the actors didn't miss a beat, and we got her out of the theater and into safety quickly and easily, and she came back. I think she needed a little orange juice, and she came back and enjoyed the rest of the show.
We had to see the rest of it.
Absolutely. She needed to know what happened at the end.
But the show must go on, and it certainly impacts the performance a little bit.
Well, I can hear you guys are really proud of the show, and you should be.
We really are.
I mean, the body of work that Porchlight has done through the years has been terrific. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about how it got started and some of the shows you guys have done through the years, because you've been around for how long?
This is our 12th season. And it was founded by Jill Moore, an actress who wanted to create her own theater. And in the beginning, she didn't quite know how the company was going to go. So she did plays and one-woman shows. And here and there, she did an original musical. And then she got an opportunity to work out on the West Coast with Disney, and she decided to do that. And she told her board, well, you know, I'm ready to pack up shop, and you guys can do what you want with the company, but, you know, if you want to close up, you can. And the board that she had chosen were all businesswomen from National Association of Realtors, and they had gotten so invested in the company, they thought, we can't have it shut down now. So they decided, well, let's do a search for artistic director. So in the meantime, they had an interim artistic director, and they did a search for an artistic director and found out through a friend of theirs that Walter was doing his first production of Sweeney Todd with his own company called Effective Theater Company. So they went and saw the production and decided to bring him on, and sure. he came on.
We started a dialogue, and I began working with Porchlight Music Theater. This is my ninth year with Porchlight.
That's right.
And we started a relationship, and we had some local critics say, well, why is Porchlight doing these kinds of shows when they are known for their outstanding musicals? And all of a sudden, we thought, we're known for something. This is what we should do. And there was a niche in Chicago. There was nobody doing sort of the intimate, sophisticated musical fare that really turned us on. And we revamped our mission statement, and we continued to develop our board of directors. And now we have a group called the Artistic Associates, who are sort of the think tank and help us in our decision making. And the rest is history. We've been devoted to doing.
Well, I didn't know that. I thought you had started the company. Yeah. Okay, yeah. That's great. Thank you for that. And Eugene, when did you get involved?
I actually started with The Vanishing Point, which is a world premiere musical. And actually, Walter designed the set. He was still in transition to become artistic director. So I was hired on. Actually, it's interesting. I was hired on. The original musical director of the show had decided to quit the night before the first rehearsal. She got a full-time job at Drury Lane Oakbrook, a good friend of mine, Amy Abler, and I was their second choice. So they called me. Walter called me and said, look, we don't have a musical director, and you were their second choice. Would you mind taking on this show? And I said, well, how long?
That's very diplomatic of you, Walter. You're the second choice.
And I thought, well, how long do I have to learn the score? He said, well, tomorrow's a rehearsal. So he dropped off the score at about 10 o'clock at night. My first rehearsal was the next day with three formidable actresses, amazingly talented people, and I was petrified. Actually, the first song I taught was this very tight three-part harmony a cappella song. And I think from there, that kind of launched me into fly-by-my-seat musical direction work. And since then, I've really, this is actually Ragtime's my 22nd show with Porchlight.
Fantastic.
So,
and your musical background?
I studied classical piano for 21 years with three different teachers, progressively increasing in advancement in terms of teachers that they taught me. They each taught me a different thing. One taught me technique, one taught me just vastness of music, and then the third teacher taught me about feeling, about how if you actually don't convey that in your music when you're playing, people won't actually be affected emotionally. So
right,
because
yeah.
of those three people, that's what's really shaped me as a musical director, that when I play a song or when I'm doing a song, I try to embody that character that I'm playing for, be it mother or father or whomever is singing. And sometimes I get emotionally invested in their songs.
And arranging just sort of came as being the music.
Really?
Yeah.
It's
that's an art form of all its own.
It, I really tried. What I've done is once we announced the show that I'm going to work on, I put away the CD completely, because then I'm completely biased and I think, oh, well, I can't have 25 musicians and can't have that sound. So instead, I just make do and I grab the books and I decide, okay, well, these are the sounds I can actually have. Let me throw the books in piles, and then I've hired amazingly gifted musicians and say, okay, this is what each of the songs need to be, or this is the sound I need. Have at it. So then they go home and they dissect their score, and then we start having rehearsals. And then with our first sits probe, when we, the musicians and actors get together for the first time, that's when we actually get to hear it. And then I go through songs and say, you know, actually, I need this during this measure or that during this measure. And we start.
So you really go at it.
It's a big collaboration. Right. It's not all me.
Walter, give us your background. Because I think you're one of the top directors in town. But you didn't start that way, I know.
No, I started as a lot of people do. I was a young actor. I played Tiny Tim everywhere they would have me. I still have the crutch, so if you need a Tiny Tim, give me a call. I studied theater, and I eventually got a theater and a teaching degree from the University of Illinois at Chicago, and started a theater company of my own called Effective Theater. I worked for many years under Michael Levitt at Fox Theatricals. That's sort of where I learned commercial theater production.
That's a top guy to learn from.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, really. So I had the pleasure of working for him and for Fox for about 3 years. And then I went from the commercial world, where you have a lot of money, to the nonprofit world. I worked for Northlight Theater and assisted Richard Friedman and Russell Vandenbroek at Northlight Theater for about 5 years.
It's nice vintage there. I'm sure you learned a lot
there.
And
I take sort of that education in the commercial world and in the nonprofit world, has influenced my life. I also, you know, as an undergrad, all of my background was in classical theater, was in Shakespeare. And we were never allowed to do musicals. But as it turns out, Shakespeare is a pretty good training ground for musical theater.
I believe it, yes.
When you think about it, Shakespeare
is... And what got you into directing? I mean, you had visions for these shows. And the corollary question to that is, how do you select the shows you do? Because you guys use a theme, or you have a different composer whose shows you do.
Sure. Well, I've often read a play or listened to a soundtrack, and I could see it. I could imagine it in my head. Sometimes I go to the theater and I watch a show and I go, well, gosh, this would be so much better if only. because I love all the theater I see, but theater in a way stimulates me into thinking and imagining what these productions would be like. And as a director, you know, I had a huge background, a very diverse educational background in design and in dramaturgy and in music and in dance and in acting. And all of these combine into what it takes to be a director.
So what made you do a lot of Stephen Sondheim shows?
Oh, well, there's just nothing better, is there?
That's true. Company was magnificent.
Thank you very much.
I hope you revive that one of these years.
I love doing Company. That was an amazing show.
But really, Sweeney Todd, by far. Now, you build this show up with this body of terrific non-equity work, and then you move up into the equity thing. And then I remember how nervous you guys were when you did it. You go, oh my God, you know, now you're Sweeney Todd. You decide to do Sweeney Todd as your first equity show. And everybody's anticipating, coming off all the awards from the site when you were the citation eligible crew, and you nailed it. It was amazing.
Thank you very much.
It really was.
It's a labor of love. You know, there's nothing better than working on that material, because you learn so much about humanity and about human relations in all of Stephen Sondheim's work. And it's, you know, a lot of people don't find his work to be very emotional, but I find it tremendously emotional.
Oh, I do. Absolutely. But to me, the kudos to you guys is, I mean, how dare you do a show like Sweeney Todd in that intimate North Theater at the theater and then make it so magnificent? I mean,
it sure is scary, isn't it?
Well, that's one of those. You either have the belief that that you're going to do it, or it's the old thing about, well, we're just going to do it, and it never occurred to me we can't do it. I mean,
sure, when the blood is flowing and that scary Sweeney Todd, there's nothing more impactful than being in it, being trapped in a tiny little theater with a psychotic serial killer singing opera.
And with the small cast that we put together for that group, I mean, we only had four musicians. We only had four, although most people don't know, but under the Stage Right platform, I had all the actors play all the percussion instruments. So it's sort of a precursor to that John Doyle Broadway production where the actors play instruments.
Maybe they got the idea from you, never know.
And it's funny where, you know, his production came after mine, and in some ways, if I had known, I would have thrown my actors out there with the garbage can and with the with the xylophone.
That would have really been a cool thing.
You know,
talk about your behind-the-scenes shows.
Absolutely, because back there, I mean, you had Joanna during God That's Good playing all sorts of stuff.
But I don't know if you realize, if you guys realize that you have kind of started a trend here, because Court Theater's starting to do these taking the big shows and making them more like chamber pieces. And so they did that with My Fair Lady. They did that with
musical theaters are a great American contribution to culture, you know, and it's only appropriate that theaters like the Court and everyone in town should tackle a musical at some point, because it's one of the great sort of...
I agree. Even Timeline did Fiorello and did a great job with it.
Yes. Absolutely.
In the interest of time now, give us your schedule for next year, because you guys, man, you never sit on your laurels, do you? You got to have the new challenge. Tell us what you got coming up.
We have no lack of ambition. No. It's a season of musicals surrounding the composer and lyricists and book team of Arthur Kopit and Maury Yeston. We open the season with their sensational version, a very different take on the classic story of the Phantom of the Opera. It's called Phantom by Yeston and Kopit.
Yes, I have. I saw... When the Candlelight did it.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's
it's right. A terrific show, and it's so different than the Andrew Lloyd Webber show.
It's a very different show, and
it's all about the backstory, really, than the Lloyd Webber version. I mean, this is all about, you know, the relationship between the father and son, and why the Phantom is singing in the opera, and when Christine and how she happened upon the opera. It's really such a great story.
All right, what is the
very
next?
Interesting. For the holiday season, we're reviving our holiday musical version of It's a Wonderful Life with by Sheldon Harnick and Joe Raposo. It was a tremendous box office success for us last season. And
great, because we need diversity in Christmas shows. We can only see Christmas Carol so many times.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And in a way, I think It's a Wonderful Life is like the American Christmas Carol. And our season closes with a smart and sophisticated musical. It's the musical version of Fellini's film 8 and a Half. It's called Nine. It was written by Arthur Kopit and Maury Yeston. It's, of course,
That is a terrific show.
Very ambitious project about a Casanova Italian film director and the 20-some-odd women who most influenced his life. And it's sort of a coming of age. And
good. We're looking forward to that. Interest of time, I always ask this question to everybody. Okay, Eugene, you'll go first. Where are you going to be 5 years from now?
Oh, my.
Yeah. In other words, what is your goal? Where do you see yourself 5 years from now?
Well,
Walter, you'll have the same question.
Well, ultimately, I would love Porch Light to have a show that moves to New York, and I would love to move with it. Ultimately, you know, we love doing Chicago work, and this is our home, but we want people in New York City to experience what Chicago theater is.
It's a great goal.
And ultimately, we'd love to do a commercial production somewhere in New York City.
Great. And Walter?
Yeah. Well, I'm a Chicago guy. I'm born and raised here, and I would love to have a home of our own here in Chicago.
Your own venue,
Our own venue. Because ultimately, it's the people who control the real estate who are controlling the culture in this city.
Isn't that true?
They can say when something's going
Last
on.
Last question, in the interest of time, Walter, you'll go first. What is your proudest achievement in theater?
Wow.
Or give us several that you're very proud of.
Sure. Well, each of these shows are like my children, and it's hard for me to pick out a favorite show because it would be hard for a parent to pick out their favorite child. I'm really tremendously proud of all of them. I guess I love the way that we're able to pull together a family in each theatrical experience. I think that I'm most proud of the fact that each of these shows turns into more of a... more of a familial community experience, kind of behind the scenes. I'm really proud of how we can do that.
That's a nice sentiment. That's a nice sentiment. Eugene?
Well, obviously, I think my two favorite theater experiences at Porchlight have been Sweeney and Ragtime, mainly because of the audiences that we've really touched. And I echo Walter's comments about the family aspect of Porchlight, because really the actors and the musicians, they're the ones who are our lifeblood. So we try to make it more of a family and a home for people to come back to. So we really love that here at Porchlight.
Great sentiment, and keep up the good work. And folks, you got to see Ragtime at the Theater Building. It's running through May 27th. Possibly extended?
Yeah, perhaps. We're working on it.
Good.
We're working hard.
Great. Thank you, folks. And remember, go see a play this week.
Hello, Chicago, and welcome to another Etresian episode of the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, bringing you Chicago's theater news for the week of May 7th, 2007. The Joseph Jefferson Awards Committee has announced the Jeff Citation nominations. That's right, the committee has announced 109 nominations in 26 categories for Chicago's non-equity theatrical productions. The shows eligible were shows that opened up in the 2006-2007 season, starting on April 1st, 2006, going all the way to March 31st of this year. The Jeff Awards Committee went to the opening nights of 127 productions offered by 55 non-equity producing organizations. Now, what's really great about Chicago's theater scene is that these productions varied from main stage musicals in small spaces, such as Bohemian Theater Ensemble's Sideshow, which incidentally was the company's first Jeff-eligible production, which was a major main stage musical fit into the theater building's smallest space. By the way, Sideshow garnered 9 nominations, all the way to Theo Ubique Theater Company, which received 7 nominations, ended up performing in a Rogers Park cafe on a stage barely bigger than a platform bed. The top nominated productions this year, each receiving 10 apiece, were Timeline Theater's Fiorello, which was their first ever staging of a musical, and the House Theater's world premiere of The Sparrow. Also unique were individual nominees such as Michael Mahler, who was nominated twice, once for actor in a principal role in a musical for his work in My Favorite Year, and also The Sweet Smell of Success. Danielle Brothers was also nominated twice for actress in a supporting role for Flora, The Red Menace, and Side by Side by Sondheim. Also, Talk Theater in Chicago favorite Peter Oyla received 2 nominations in 2 different categories, one for actor in a principal role for his work in Equus with the Actors Workshop Theater, and for doing the original incidental music for the show as well. The Jeff Award Citation Ceremony will be held on Monday, June 11th at Park West in Chicago, Illinois. For the complete list of nominees and for more information, click on over to Talk Theater in Chicago's Theater News section. Also, for extended in-depth coverage of all the nominees, just click through the archives of Talk Theater in Chicago. We actually interviewed many of the nominees, so check it out. Timeline Theater Company has announced their 2007-2008 season. Timeline Theater Company is dedicated to presenting plays that are inspired by history, yet connect to today's social and political issues, has decided on a wonderful slate for this upcoming season. The season will include a great American playwright's favorite work, 2 Chicago premieres by award-winning contemporary playwrights, and a remount of one of the company's popular productions. Opening on August 25th will be Paradise Lost by Clifford Odets. A great American playwright, a great classic story, and a great theater company. I think it's going to be a good play to see. Opening up on November 10th will be the Chicago premiere of Tesla's Letters by Jeffrey Stanley. This one will be directed by Nick Bowling. Following that and opening up on January 26th will be another Chicago premiere, Dolly West's Kitchen by Frank McGinnis. This one will be directed by Kimberly Senior. And closing out with the season will be the remount of Timeline's popular show and 10-time Jeff Award nominee, Fiorello. The remount will be directed by Nick Bowling and opens up on April 19th of next year. For more information, stay tuned to Talk Theater in Chicago's Theater News section. The Goodman Theater has announced another addition to their 2007-2008 season, and it's going to be the Fats Waller musical revue, Ain't Misbehavin'. The revival will be directed by resident director Chuck Smith and opens in the spring of next year in the Owen Theater. There is still one more slot, however, left to be filled in the Owen Theater season, and for that mystery show, stay tuned to... Well, you know where to stay tuned. Well, thank you for listening to this Atresian episode of the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. We have come to the end of the news, but before we let you go, it's time for your Shakespeare Quote of the Week. The following quote comes from As You Like It, Act 4, Scene 3. Kindness, nobler ever than revenge. Well, thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. Remember, we are here every Monday with a new episode ready to stick in your ears. So until next time, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you that theater's happening. Don't miss it.
You are listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago Review Podcast, Ragtime, directed by Walter Stearns and produced by Porchlight Music Theater. Review by Tom Williams. Porchlight Music Theater, Chicago's Ragtime, is their finest work since their magnificent Sweeney Todd a couple of years ago. This is a major achievement for Walter Stearns and Eugene Dyson, whose uncanny ability to stage major shows with a large look and feel in a small space is incomparable. From the multi-level set designed by Roy Hein, to the grand music arrangements from Eugene Dyson's orchestra, to the fine, seamless choreography by Brenda Didier, to the wonderful voices this ragtime begs to be seen, Porchlight's Ragtime will move you with its stunning heart and honest emotional core. This is musical theater at its finest. Featuring a Tony Award-winning book by Terrence McNally that weaves E.L. Doctorow's novel into a cohesive story, Ragtime tells three separate stories. A Harlem musician, that of a wealthy New Rochelle WASP family, and a Latvian Jewish immigrant in a poignant exposé of the timeless contradictions of wealth and poverty, freedom and prejudice, hope and despair, and love and hate in 1906 America. Ragtime is a lesson on how to adapt a novel for the stage. With a Tony Award-winning score by Stephen Flattery that has a mixture of ragtime, vaudeville, and early jazz, together with lofty ballads, a touch of gospel, a little Eastern European Jewish flavor, a hint of Joplin, and stirring anthems which aptly move the story along. Lynn Aaron's lyrics are meaningful and resonating. Director Walter Stearns' tight staging and smooth transitions are polished and give the show an epic feel. His casting in the show is superb, featuring so many outstanding performances with excellent dancing ability and strong voices, despite only having two equity contracts available. Choreographer Brenda Didier's dances were brilliantly staged, with a nice variety appropriate to each song. Among the cast are the strong-voiced Carissa Armand as Mother, whose presence complemented the Bill Ingram's bewildered father. Both sang their numbers nicely. Drew Makuska's vibrancy as the little boy was cute, while Scott Sawinski played the brother with a messianic fervor. Carla Beard's wonderful voice gave Sarah a warm feel, while Jason Brooks's youthfully optimistic Cole House Walker Jr. was electrifying. Brooks has a marvelous voice as he nailed Wheels of a Dream and Make Them Hear You wonderfully. Jason Brooks is certainly a star in the making. Aaron Graham as Tata, the Jewish immigrant, determined to get his share of the American dream, offered fine singing and excellent acting. Jeremy Traeger's Harry Houdini, Sarah Hayes's Emma Goldman, and Maggie Portman's Evelyn Nesbitt added fine turns. The cast of 21 players gave depth to this ambitious piece, especially Randolph Johnson's stately Booker T. Washington. Porchlight's Ragtime, staged in an intimate venue, allows the show's richly emotional elements to penetrate into our psyche. The many fine harmonies and melodies were memorable and heartwarming. Kudos to Porchlight Music Theater for this triumph. Ragtime just begs to be seen. Come and rediscover the epic saga of America, and bring your teens so they can discover musical theater at its finest. I give the show a highly recommended rating. Ragtime. Directed by Walter Stearns, music direction by Eugene Dyson, choreographed by Brenda Didier, and produced by Porchlight Music Theater at the Theater Building Chicago, located at 1225 West Belmont in Chicago, Illinois. Running time, 2 hours and 20 minutes, now through May the 27th. For tickets and more information, call 773-327-5252.
Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast. I would like to thank Walter Stearns and Eugene Dijon for giving us the honor of interviewing them this week. I would also like to thank Tom Williams and Mark Meyer. Without them, this podcast would not be possible. And also, I would like to thank you, our listening audience. Remember, we are here every Monday with a new episode ready for your listening pleasure. So until next time, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you that theater's happening. Don't miss it.